जय गोपी जन वाला बागिरि वरदारी। जय गोपी जन वाला बागिरि वरदारी। यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावनचारी। यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, entitled The Renunciation of Kardama Muni, Text 43. Mano Brahmani Yujjano Yat Tat Sat Asata Param Gunava base viguna Eka bhaktyanu bhavite Mano brahmani yujjano Yat tat sat asata param Gunava base viguna Eka bhaktyanubhavite Mano brahmani yujjano Yat tat sat asata param Gunava base viguna Eka bhaktyanubhavite
Hey.
Shano Yatat Sat Ashataparam Gunava Base Viguna Eva Patana. Manaha, mind, Brahmani, on the Supreme, Yujanaha, fixing, Yat, which, Tat, that, Sat Asataha, cause and effect, Param, beyond. Gunavabhase, who manifests the three modes of material nature. Vigune, who is beyond the material modes. Ekabhaktya, by exclusive devotion. Anubhavite, who is perceived. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yeah. He fixed his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahman, who is beyond cause and effect, who manifests the three modes of material nature, who is beyond those three modes, and who is perceived only through unfailing devotional service. Purport. Whenever there is bhakti, there must be three things present: the devotee, the devotion, and the Lord. Without these three, bhakta, bhakti, and bhagavan, there is no meaning to the word bhakti. Kardama Muni fixed his mind on the Supreme Brahman and realized him through bhakti, or devotional service. This indicates that he fixed his mind on the personal feature of the Lord, because bhakti cannot be executed unless one has realization of the personal feature of the Absolute Truth. Gunavabhase, he is beyond the three modes of material nature, but it is due to him that the three modes of material nature are manifested. In other words, although the material energy is an emanation of the Supreme Lord, he is not affected, as we are, by the modes of material nature. We are conditioned souls, but he is not affected, although the material nature has emanated from him. He is the supreme living entity and is never affected by Maya, but we are subordinate, minute living entities, prone to be affected by the limitations of Maya. If he is in constant contact with the Supreme Lord by devotional service, the conditioned living entity also becomes freed from the infection of Maya. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Sagunan Samatityaitan. A person engaged in Krishna consciousness is at once liberated from the influence of the three modes of material nature. In other words, once the conditioned soul engages himself in devotional service, he also becomes liberated like the Lord. Om Akyantimarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitam Scha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dino Bando Jagat Pate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare I beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada. I ask for your blessings and mercy. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Srila Prabhupada and our Guru Parampara. May Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar be pleased. May all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together. Hare Krishna. So again, this is Canto 3, Chapter 24, entitled The Renunciation of Kardama Muni, Text 43. He fixed his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahman, who is beyond cause and effect, who manifests the three modes of material nature, who is beyond those three modes, and who is perceived only through unfailing devotional service. So we're hearing about the renunciation of Kardama Muni, Vanam Jagama. It said that at this point, he's leaving for the forest. He's going to the forest. Of course, even before he was married, he spoke with his future wife at that time, Devahuti, and her father, Svayambhuva Manu, and he let them know from the very beginning his whole plan. He said, yes, I'd be happy to accept your daughter's hand in marriage, but this is one condition I have, that after we live our life, responsibilities are performed, and we have children, at that point I will go to the forest. So it was understood. This was the plan from the beginning. He wanted to engage himself in Dharman Paramahamsa Mukyan, the duties of a Paramahamsa, renunciate. So this time has come for him to leave. And this is the Vedic system, Varna and Ashram. Varna means your particular nature. First you have to identify what is your nature. And formally also, whatever you could understand about your nature, then you'd be guided by a teacher in that way. Like today they have, you know, vocational schools. So this is a good way to go for children. Try to identify the nature and then specifically have teachers that can teach some trade or some work connected to that nature. There's no need to learn so many other subjects and things like that. You know, a little bit is okay, but really if there's some inclination and a person likes to do that, then you have very specific gurus for that category and they can set up their life very nicely. Formerly, this was much easier because natures were very defined and very clear. Now we all wonder, right? What do I do? What is my nature? What should I do with my life? What should my work be? So things have become very mixed. The varnas were very defined and clear. So because of the mixing of the varnas, now it's hard to sometimes discover those things. But anyway, it was clear the nature of Kardama Muni, Brahmana, Yogi, renunciate, all this was there. He was Brahmachari, then Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. And so the Varnas is one thing, and then also the Ashram. And these Ashrams, you go through different Ashrams, just like I mentioned Kardama Muni. really it's preparing us for death. You know, early in life you get training in character, brahmachari, celibacy, sense control, study of the scripture. And then one is married for some time. And then one begins, after some time you have children, and then at a certain time, one can now again wind down their material involvement and activities and responsibilities and get more focused on their spiritual life. Vanaprastha sannyas. So this was Kardama Muni, what he's giving the example of here. It's preparing us for death, because death is a forced renunciation, isn't it? The laws of nature force you to become renounced. And therefore, death often catches us off guard. But before that time comes, there's meant to be a voluntary letting go of things. So the Varnashram system is perfect for that. It's setting you up for voluntary, letting more and more go, less and less, more simple, more dedication to the Lord. And then when that moment comes, the end of life, one is nicely prepared. But, you know, working as a hospice chaplain with people as they're dying, and it's very rare to see someone who's thought of this in advance, how to prepare, what should I do before dying? And so suddenly, just by nature, it's being stripped away. And it's very difficult all at once for everything to be taken away. With devotees, we should meditate on this for others in our lives and also for ourselves. And we can see this example of Kardama Muni, that this was his condition from the very beginning, even before marriage. This is my plan. This is our plan. Because also, the husband has the responsibility that the wife and the children are also taken care of after he leaves, materially and spiritually. So we'll see. That arrangement is of course, very amazing in this case, because the son that he leaves behind to take care of his wife is an incarnation of the Lord, Kapila Dev. It's a very special situation here. So this idea, when you think of the ashrams, it's really moving towards a deeper dependence on God, a deeper surrender, a deeper commitment. And Varnashram facilitates that we get there. So even if we're not exactly following this, you know, just as it is in the scripture, we still have to understand the spirit of each of these ashrams and try to imbibe that. Because things have changed, you know. Just like formerly at 50 years old, right? Prabhupada would always quote, Pancha Sarvam Vanam Vrajet. At the age of 50, go to the forest. So he says in the purport previously that no one should go to the forest anymore. But what does it mean to go to the forest? It means that. It means leaving behind some material involvement, setting everything up, but then leaving it behind and a complete dedication and focus on the Lord. So that can be actually done from anywhere. So the externals sometimes have changed because of the passage of time, but we should always see the spirit of these different instructions to us. Because it's very interesting, Prabhupada starts that purport about going to the forest. The first thing he says, going to the forest is compulsory for everyone. And then you go a little further down, and he says, forest means full dedication and surrender to the Lord. That's what it means now. Formerly, it actually meant go to the forest, and you have full dedication. But now this is the internal meaning, the real meaning, is for all of us. So Kardama Muni, he has 9 daughters. And finally, a son is born. Param Pradhanam Purusham Kapilam. The Supreme Person comes as his son, Kapila Dev, who is a very beautiful boy, Shukla. He had fair complexion. Hiranyakeshaha. He had golden hair. Actually, Kapila also means golden brown, the color of his hair. Kapila. And he came to teach the whole world the philosophy, Sankhya, devotional Sankhya. Sankhya means enumeration or to count, because there's a description of all the different elements of material nature. He gives the definitions of all the different elements. And actually, that is important for us to learn. This next chapter, these next chapters will be great for us. We should actually come and really hear, because sometimes a word is used in Sanskrit in a loose way. Even in English, we say, you know, do it with your heart, right? Do something with your heart. So it's a loose way of speaking. We don't really mean, the heart is like a pump, right? So what do we mean? And sometimes even a Sanskrit word like chitta, you know, sometimes chitta is defined as heart, sometimes as consciousness, sometimes as intelligence. And it's used in different ways in the scripture. But the best way to start to really understand what a word means is you have to find the clear, precise definition first. And then you can kind of see where why it's used in other ways at different times. So Kapila Dev, in this section coming up, he gives the very precise, clear definitions of all these things. What is buddhi? What is manas, the mind? And then you can use it loosely if you like, but here's the clear paribhasha. The definition is actually given. That should be understood first. And then you have it clear in your head, and then you can understand why it's used maybe in different ways at different verses or times. So why is that important, even on the path of bhakti? Because this is the foundation. We have to first have very clear understanding of things. When that's very clear, we can bring that into our practice, into our bhajan, into our sadhana. Sambandha, abhideya, prayojana, in that order. Sambandha jnana, first knowledge of all of these things, the material nature, God, the living entity, atma tattva, all of these things are heard first and for a long time. And then abhideya, now you can begin the practice properly. And then this will lead to prayojana, the goal. So these things are always given in this way. So he's going to teach Sankhya Yoga. And also, he also has another purpose in coming. It's very sweet, the Supreme Lord, it says that his mission is that all over the world, this will be given, the knowledge of Sankhya Yoga, devotional Sankhya, all over the world. And then he also comes, he says, for Matre, for my mother. He's also appearing in this way, in this form, for his mother. Why? Bayam ati tarishyati, to remove the fear from her heart. Because if you remember, the previous chapter was called Devahuti's Lamentation. So what was her lamentation? Her lamentation was that now my husband is leaving, and how unfortunate I am. I didn't take advantage of his association fully. He's vimuktidam. He can give liberation. And now he's leaving, and I don't feel liberated. I still feel fear. This was her lamentation. My husband is leaving, he could have removed my fear. What did I do? I wasted so much time and other things, and now he's leaving. So therefore, when Kapila Dev appears, he says, I've also come for this mission, to now remove the fear from my mother's heart. So he appears, Lord Brahma comes and offers his respects, worships him, and then Kardama Muni himself approaches the Lord, Kapila Dev, the little boy, in a secluded place, and he circumambulates him, and he offers his pranam, his obeisances, and his beautiful prayers he offers. And then he also asks for permission. My Supreme Lord, you have come. How merciful you are. Usually it's yogis sitting in meditation in some cave that can contact you. But I'm a grihastha, and you have come even into our home. How kind you are that you've appeared in this way. I offer my deep and loving obeisances to you. And I also ask for your permission that I may go to the forest now. Interesting request, right? He's got the Supreme Lord in his house, in his home, as his son. May I go to the forest now? Why? Why leave? So Prabhupada explains that nicely. He's setting the example. He's still honoring the system, the Vedic system, because it will be good for all after him. So Kardama Muni is going to become famous very soon because the son, his son, the Supreme Lord took birth as his son, so his fame will spread far and wide. But we still see this example. He's honoring this system because it's very conducive for most people. And it's very rare to have the Lord come as your son. What's going to be more appropriate for most people to understand is the Varna Ashram, all leading to pure bhakti. Varna Ashram is conducive for pure bhakti. And this is really what he's going to teach, even though the son, the Lord appears in his own home. Also, another thing is that the Lord may appear before your eyes. That's very special. But when Kardama Muni leaves, and he's always in a state of remembrance of the Lord in his heart, and remembering the Lord in your heart when you're sufficiently purified, and seeing the Lord face to the face are also non-different. So we think, why would he leave? He's not going to see the Lord. No, he is going to see the Lord, because smaranam, remembrance, is also darshan. Darshan means a vision of the Lord. It's not just your eyes. Hearing is also darshan at a certain purified state. That's why bhakti is called shutekshita pata, the path. This is a verse in Bhagavatam. Bhakti is the path of seeing through the ears. But that's not just poetic. That literally means if you hear through the ears in a purified state, you have internal vision of God. You see God. It's not just a poetic way of speaking. That's the power of bhakti, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshiping the Lord, prayer, all of these things, at a certain stage, become a direct experience of Krishna. So one shouldn't think the eyes is the best. If I see, I want to see God. But you can see God in many ways. And the way it's arranged is that through these items of devotional service, all of them lead to the vision of God. So him leaving and always being in a state of love of God and remembrance of God, this is the same as seeing God face to face. You know, this shutekshita patta, the path of seeing through hearing. When you are hearing from a pure devotee, because it is darshan for them, they are seeing the Lord manifest in their own heart, and then they're speaking, so it takes the form of sound vibration. They're seeing. They're in full connection with the Lord. And then that vision comes out to us in sound form. It transforms into sound. And if a person is hearing that in the proper way, that sound vibration enters their ear and then also allows them to have the vision within their heart. It's amazing. So if you're in a realization of God and you speak, say you're seeing Krishna in your heart, and then you speak the pastime of Krishna, it's actually coming out in sound vibration. It's still the vision of Krishna. It goes into the ear of somebody through sound, enters their heart, and they also have the vision. So when pure devotees are talking and exchanging, everyone's having darshan of the Lord through hearing the katha. Therefore, shutekshita patta, seeing through hearing, is possible. So, here, Kardama Muni, he leaves for the forest. As we mentioned, Prabhupada would quote often, Pancha Surdvam Vanam Vrajet, at the age of 50, go to the forest. And then he explains, as I mentioned, what forest means. Look at Prabhupada's example. Actually, today we're honoring the incorporation of ISKCON. It's honored today. That must be the lunar calendar, because I was recently in New York. Yadubar Prabhu was also there for the incorporation of ISKCON just last month. The actual date was July 13th on the certificate. July 13th. Prabhupada incorporated ISKCON, 26 Second Avenue. So it's amazing to think this go to the forest doesn't literally mean, what did Prabhupada do at his advanced age? First he did. He went to Vrindavan. And he took sannyas. And then he comes to America. This is the forest also, because forest, as Prabhupada says, means full surrender, dedication, and service. So he enters the forest of Manhattan Island. Oh, it's amazing to think. You know, we went on this beautiful bus tour. Yadubar Prabhu was there, and other devotees were there, going to all the places that Prabhupada went when he arrived in New York. This is where he met Hayagriva, right on this corner. This is where he went uptown first, Dr. Mishra's yoga studio where he stayed. And Prabhupada at that time was getting on a bus sometimes, just getting a little money. Got a couple, you know, a few quarters here and there from some donation or something, get on a bus and just would drive through Manhattan and look and think how to do this, how to complete this mission given to me by my spiritual master. So total dependence, total surrender. Incredible. I've had the honor of being a board member of 26 Second Avenue for maybe like 15 years now. So it's beautiful. All of you can go to 26 Second Avenue. It's transformed these past couple years, and now it's a real beautiful memorial. When you walk in, there are all the pictures of Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue, and you can read those little excerpts of things happening at each place. And it's a real meditation now. It's set up exactly as it was, 1966. Everything has been transformed to it. Original paintings also have been sent by devotees from different parts of the world that were there at the time. The original paintings are now there. And you go there and you just feel Prabhupada's presence and power. So it's a beautiful place of pilgrimage. So Prabhupada's example at his advanced age to do what he did, depending on the Lord. So this is expected of all of us. It may take a different form. But as we get older, we should think in this way. What does vanaprastha really mean? What is the spirit of vanaprastha? What is the spirit of sannyas? It's difficult because, we're getting older, things get harder, right? The bodies break down and different things come. And so it's kind of so counterintuitive for the ordinary mind to think at that time, now time to really go and get serious. You know, 70 years old, Prabhupada, coming by boat. At 70 is when you think, well, I've done a lot, I lived my life, I've done enough, now just take it easy a little bit. It's an incredible example. And it won't take the same form for us, perhaps, but we still have to very much meditate on these, the end of our life and some preparation. I'm always with people who are shocked that they're dying. And sometimes they're 98 years old, 99, 100. And it still comes as a total shock when it comes. I was with a man who was 99 years old, and he was actually healthy even into his 90s, always healthy. And then at 99, it took a quick turn. Now it's coming. Suddenly he woke up, oh my God, I'm going to die. It's like it just hit him then at 99 years old, and he was shocked, and he was upset, and he was trying to make all these arrangements, and he was frantic. So let that not happen to us, but let us, as we're growing older, meditate, letting go of this, letting go of that, little deeper shelter. Let us think about what's going to be taken away. So Kardama Muni was like that. So it says he goes off to the forest, and the first thing, he takes a vow. What was his vow? Anyone remember from previous verses? The first vow, huh? Maunam. Mauna. That he takes the vow of silence. So again, that we could say that literally meant, you know, when we hear of this vrata of taking silence, there are renunciates who actually just take a total vow of silence, no speaking. But we hear the deeper meaning of monam by Prabhupada. The deeper meaning, Prabhupada says, is to not speak like a fool. That's what he says in the purport. To not speak nonsense. We have to speak. Even in, you know, we have to do practical things and use our speaking. But really, deeper way of practicing silence is to not speak what is unnecessary and to speak what is necessary. Krishna Katha. You speak about Krishna. And you have practical things you have to speak throughout life. But don't speak unnecessarily, and especially don't criticize. If you can do that, you're showing a stronger discipline than one person who just remains completely silent. Because it's harder to have control. I can speak, but let me not speak in that way, let me speak in this way. That's more advanced than just saying complete silence. I'll stop speaking completely. So it's actually more difficult. It's easier to take a total vow in silence than to continue speaking, but only speak what is necessary and appropriate and glorifies the Lord. And refrain from criticism, especially this is what is mentioned by our acharyas. There's a verse in the Chaitanya Bhagavat in connection to Jagai and Madai, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he speaks this verse that even if one is incredibly sinful, even if one is addicted to alcohol, whatever sinful activities we do, even if it's very gross, that person can very easily be delivered by the power of the holy name. But if one has the habit of criticizing others, then nothing auspicious can be in their destination. Nothing auspicious can come. That's a verse. That's from Madhya Kanta, chapter 13, text 43. So you can be very sinful and struggle with all kinds of bad habits, no problem. You have good sadhu sangha, you chant the holy name, you stay around devotees, you continue, that can completely vanish by the power of the name. But if you have the habit of criticizing, then Lord Chaitanya says, nothing auspicious can be in your future. So we also hear, what is the characteristic of the highest devotee? Rupa Goswami says in Upadeshamrita, the Nectar of Instruction, Ninda Shunya. Ninda Shunya. That the highest devotee loses the tendency and the capacity to find faults and criticize others. They don't have that, they lose that tendency completely. They no longer do so. An advanced devotee will not do so. And what is the characteristic of the lowest devotee? That's the highest devotee, free from criticizing. Devoid of the propensity to criticize, Prabhupada puts it that way. Become devoid of the propensity to criticize. So, and also Bhagavatam tells us in the 11th canto, one of the characteristics of the lower devotee, Prakrita Bhakta, the materialistic devotee, Natat Bhakteshu Chanyeshu, they have great honor for the Lord. This is the materialistic devotee. Honor for the Lord and honor for their guru. But they don't know how to honor the devotees. And they also don't know how to honor the people in general, chanyeshu, ordinary people. So to honor the Lord, the honor Guru, but also very carefully honoring all the devotees. And Rupa Goswami also gives us the information of how to do that. If one is a very beginning devotee, not even initiated yet, he says you should honor them in the core of your heart, in your mind. Manasa adriyeta. That in the mind you should honor that person. Brand new person. Wow, they've come to the temple. They've come to Krishna. They're trying in some way. This is very special. I honor them in my heart. And I speak to them from that place of honor. I interact with them from that place of honor. And if one has taken diksha, initiation, then one should give their pranams, obeisances. This is why every day after we do, you know, we say the prayers and Vancha kalpa turubhyascha kripa sindubhyascha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Every day we're offering these prayers. Anyone who's taken initiation, wow, not just coming and participating a little bit and leaving, but actually they've taken a commitment. My full obeisances to that person. This is Rupa Goswami's advice. And then for the highest devotee, what should you do? He says you stay close and you serve them. So he gives us the information of how to honor all classes of devotees. There's a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, where he's praying to his guru. Gurudev, please bless me that I can learn how to treat all the devotees appropriately according to their positions, so that I can become free from aparad. That's why. If you chant the holy name and go through this process of Krishna consciousness, and also you're very careful how you're treating all these different kinds of devotees, then one can become free from aparad. And it's not just the devotees. It's actually all living beings, we have to be careful. Because we can develop habits with ordinary living beings of being critical, and naturally we'll take that into the devotional sangha as well. So it may not be aparad. If you speak harshly to some ordinary person in the world, it's not necessarily aparad. But it's a habit that may be formed that it can lead to aparad, because it will be brought everywhere. We're conditioning ourselves in a certain way. Yeah. So all devotees, even someone brand new, they may have in their heart the Bhakti Lata Bij. The Bhakti Lata Bij is indestructible once it's there. Once it's been awakened or given in the heart of a person, this Bhakti Lata Bij, it's actually indestructible. A person can fall away, even become an offender, and it gets covered over for some time. But when sins and offenses wear off, then it awakens again. So just think, not everybody has this. Well, I guess it's debatable. Different views. The Bhakti Lata Bij, is it always there in all living beings or not? But anyway, the point is, it's something very special that's been given, awakened by a pure devotee at some point, and now it is there, it is active. How wonderful. And so, how careful also to not offend this amazing process that's going on in the person next to you. And going on, it's going on in our own hearts. So as this Bhakti Lata Bij is compared to like it's a bij, it's a seed, but it begins to grow, and then a fence is required to keep it safe from Hatimata, the mad elephant. So what is the fence that protects it from the mad elephant? A fence. Anyone remember Rupa Goswami's example? He says a fence has to be created around this plant that's growing. What is that fence? Someone said, I heard association. Yes, sadhu sangha is the fence. If you're around very advanced sadhus, they don't have the propensity to find fault, and you just being in that association, you'll become like that too. I've had this experience. I'm always finding fault. When I'm with my spiritual master, my tongue just gets stopped if I'm going to say, you know, in that presence. If maybe, you know, he he will test me in some way or ask about some devotee, and maybe that devotee is doing some things that are very questionable. But I'll present what I know in a way that's totally non-offensive. Now, if it wasn't my spiritual master, who knows how I'm going to speak. But in his presence, seeing how careful he is and how encouraging he is to all devotees, when he asks me about something going on with someone and I start to explain, I realize I'm being very careful and respectful. So that's the power of being in very advanced sadhu sangha. So the fence to protect this bhakti latta bija that's growing is advanced sadhu sangha. Many people will argue that, well, sometimes people have to be criticized or you have to point out what's happening. You have to be realistic. Or we have to do it in the name of service to protect others. And we have to point out, right? Call a spade a spade. Prabhupada said that, right? Well, I have to be truthful. And if this is happening in this way with this person, it should be talked about so others can also be safe. Right? So sometimes we hear this argument. But let us hear the advice of Vrindavan Das Thakur, because he deals with this subject. He says, even amongst devotees, if there's something happening, there's some conflict, there's some bad behavior, he gives very nice formula. See, if we see that, we start talking immediately. We may start talking about it. And in this way, we get implicated. But if you can follow his formula, there's a way of not getting implicated. He says, if there's some conflict, if there's some fault, there's something going on, then you should praise that devotee. Okay, that's step one. Say there's a conflict between two people. He says you should not take sides. You should praise both of those devotees. That's step one. Step two, you yourself should take deep shelter of the chanting of the holy name. Before you start speaking and going and beginning the whole process of criticism, which is like a natural process in the conditioned soul, we want to go there. It flows out like a river, naturally, for the conditioned soul. But if we hold back, what has this devotee done? Let me find the praises. Let me speak. And let me remember those praises. Let me take deep shelter of the holy name. He said, by doing those two things for some time, then you'll be blessed with divya mati, divine intelligence of how to handle the situation. It will come as a blessing from doing those two things. If you don't criticize, but instead you praise and find the goodness in those devotees, and you take deep shelter of the holy name, you will be provided with the intelligence with now what to do practically. Because otherwise we jump into the practical things. We got to do this, we got to do it as a service, we got to mention all these things, and we haven't done that purification first. And then oftentimes our ego is involved, the false ego, and we're implicating ourselves. I was sharing this the other day, we were talking about this the other day, that my spiritual master also mentions that if there's some issue with devotees, and they have some anger towards each other, it's like they're being caught in a web. And most devotees, if they're not careful, just by hearing about the conflict, they also enter that same web. And other devotees who start talking about it, they enter also into that web. And then everybody's in this web. So, Vrindavan Das Thakur's advice, praise that devotee, those devotees. See what is wonderful and special. See the inspired being. Because all of us, we have a conditioned nature, which, by the way, has no relationship to the soul. It's just something we've picked up from the material energy. We're just struggling in this world, and we've picked up certain bad qualities and also so-called good qualities that aren't truly good, but are just kind of a conditioning. So we pick that up. And we're dealing with that, all of us, on the path of bhakti. But there's this other part of us, the inspired self. There's the conditioned self, and there's this inspired self. Something has been inspired, has been changed. and we're trying to in our best way to move towards that. So see that part of a devotee. So even one who's done wrong, see that part. The dedication to service, the efforts that have been made, the struggle. And we can feel pity. We can feel pity and compassion also. So this is true mona. This is true silence. Is that you speak, use this tongue for practical matters in your life, for glorifying the Lord, and refrain from criticizing devotees. So this is a new... So Kardama Muni took Mona Vrat, but this is how it's described what Mona is for a devotee by our acharyas. Uh-huh. And here also it says, Mano Brahmani Yujjano, in this verse today, keeping the mind fixed on God. This is the other thing he does. So he goes off to the forest, he takes a vow of silence, and he fixes his mind on the Lord. Mano Brahmani Yujjano, keeping the mind fixed on God. This is not so easy, right? In the Shastra, there's always two things that are mentioned. Viddhi and Nished. Viddhi and Nished. Viddhi is like a instruction, do this. And Nished means don't do this. Prohibition. So often we get an instruction, fixed, keep the mind fixed on God. But it's important to be aware of the nished. Otherwise, when we try to do the instruction, we'll find that, who can do it? Always keep the mind on God. Can you do it? If you're struggling and you're not able to do it, then you want to become aware of what not to do that will help you do what you want to do. This is an example. You want to get up. You want to start getting up very early in the morning. So that's a viddhi. That's something you want to do for yourself, an instruction. You're instructing yourself to do that. But it's not working out. You keep getting up late, doesn't work, you're wavering. So then you should think, well, what's the nishade? What should I not do that may help me do this? You should not eat late at night. You should not stay up late at night. You should consider the day before and all the things you shouldn't do that will help you do what you want to do. So, this instruction, keeping the mind always on God, if we find that we can't do it, then we should ask, well, what is it that I should not do that will help me do it? And that answer is given by one of our acharyas, Raghunath Das Goswami. He directly deals with this subject. In the Mana Shiksha, there's a nice verse. I think it's the fourth verse. But he says, Matti Sarvasya Harini. What steals away, harini, stolen, what steals away a person's resolve, concentration, focus, the ability to keep your mind? How do you keep your mind on God? How do you chant attentively? So he says there's something specifically that steals away that power. What is that? He says, Asat Varta Vesha Vishaja. Asat Varta means when we are constantly taking in mundane news, mundane topics, mundane discussions, mundane events that are happening in the world. If we're constantly taking that in, if we don't refrain in some way to quiet that, it's like a loud volume. In this material world, if we turn down that volume, the mind will become more steady. You start to regain your matti. Matti is an interesting word. Matti means, it's described in different ways, but you could take it as a certain resolve, a consciousness, a determination, right? This was like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would give the blessing to people. Krishne Matir Astu. This is how he would greet people. May your matti, your consciousness, be fixed on Krishna, always. It was his blessing to people. Krishne matir astu. Lord Chaitanya would greet people in that way. So this matti means this consciousness, focus, resolve, concentration. What steals it away is when it's used to get, it gets absorbed in mundane news. It's coming at us at all times, especially with a phone, huh? This is like, really. I mean, Kardama Muni, just look at his life. It was just none of that. And then therefore, these things happen so easily. Brahmachari, perfect Grihastha, Vanapras, Sannyas, all perfect. Because nothing else was touching him. For us, this is the great challenge. So much is coming in and trying to get into our consciousness. We should refrain from it. Protect the matti. Protect this ability to concentrate and focus. It's there in us. But if we can turn this volume down and then focus it on the Lord, that will give us the power to focus it better on the Lord, to chant attentively. So this is throughout, you know, also Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Raghunath Das Goswami. He said the same thing. Gramya kata na shunibe. Gramya varta, that same word, varta, na kahibe. You shouldn't listen to gramya kata. We translate it sometimes as village talk, but let's be more applicable to the present moment. It's any of the talk that's happening out there. It's not a little village. It's coming through media. It's coming through other people talking about so many things, events, the news. It could be a little informed, but we don't want to make it an absorption. It will steal away your concentration to focus your mind on Krishna. And when that matti begins to mature, that ability to concentrate, then it forms into, if we're focusing on Krishna, maybe we're a little bit flickering at first, it's hard to keep the attention, but as it matures, it becomes Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Mati. Prabhupada says, this is where I got the inspiration to call this Krishna consciousness, from this verse. You've heard this before, right? Prabhupada said, it is from this verse that I came up with the term Krishna consciousness. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati. Krishna bhakti rasa. The rasa of bhakti directed towards Krishna. Bhavita means like very concentrated. The mati, the consciousness becomes very concentrated on the rasa of Krishna bhakti. So Prabhupada, from this verse, I came up with the term Krishna consciousness, he said. So when that matti, that concentration is carefully protected and we're not putting everything into our minds, but we refrain and we focus, then it will form into this deep bhavita, means a very concentrated focus on the Lord. These things become possible. So this is the example of Kardama Muni here. He's able to do this because of a lifelong intention and focus. And the same is expected of us, even though it's very different circumstances, but we have to find some way. And there are ways to absorb ourselves and to also refrain. We have to make that effort. Many things we can't do yet, but there's certain things we cannot do. Nishad, viddi and nishad. These two things, the rule and the prohibition. So for all the instructions we get, we should also consider, what is the nishad? What is the thing not to do that will help me do what I need to do? So we'll stop here. If there's any thoughts, comments, questions. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the class. You said when you're in a purified state, when you hear in a purified state, you can see God.
Yes.
Is that like a somehow, someday kind of thing, or is it more tangible?
It could be by Krishna's grace. We can always say that, right? But our acharyas have said it specifically at the stage of nishta. You are now capable of receiving the darshan of the Lord in your heart. So nishta, so you know the stages Rupa Goswami gives. First there's shraddha. There's this faith. That's the bhakti latta beach, actually. First takes that form. Then one wants to be in sadhu sangha. And the culmination of the sadhu sangha is one takes initiation from a guru. So now you're connected. And then you learn from that guru and the sadhus bhajana kriya, how to perform bhajan, sadhana. And then what comes up of all these anarthas. And when you begin to start to overcome some of the anarthas and become fixed, that's the mark. Right there, now that you're able to become fixed, it's kind of what we're talking about now, this matti, this attention becomes absorbed and fixed. Right there, now you're capable of getting the darshan of the Lord within your heart. It's almost like you're at a stage now where that is very possible again and again. So it could happen before, it's rare, but there could be moments of that experience as well. But this is the stages that are given, and particularly this stage of Nishta, it said one gets a darshan of a reflection of the Lord's form. So not directly also the form, but a reflection of the form. Because it's the reflection comes into your chitta, and your chitta is a material element. Because it's a material element, when you see anything through the chitta, it's like a filter that's there. You don't actually see perfectly the Lord's form, but you see a reflection of it. When the chitta melts at the stage of bhav, the chitta actually melts, and then you can directly see God face to face.
Isn't more of a, not a physical form, but as you mentioned, Sutra Ikshita.
Yes,
internal. Means philosophically you see the Lord's presence in your life, in your service, you are offering, you are under guidance, serving, chanting. So philosophically you see, and more you are aware Lord's presence, then he will be practically seeing, and then spontaneously comes.
Yes, the way I've heard it is that it's an internal darshan, so it's not necessarily, it's internal. But it's interesting because the way the acharyas give it is that at a stage of nishta, you can then see the form. At the stage of, and some of the qualities begin to also become revealed to you. And then at ruchi, then you see more. You start to see the... even the associates are revealed and things like that. And as the stages increase, you're seeing more and more. So it is an internal vision. It's an internal experience. So it's not just like an awareness also, like I'm more aware of God. Or you actually have a realization of the qualities of Krishna. And you're affected by that. You know.
But Prabhupada also said, heart means center of consciousness. Hmm. It is not the emotional heart, oh, he broke my heart or she broke my heart. Yeah. We're not talking about that, neither physical heart.
Yeah.
But center of consciousness that I'm aware Krishna descended from Golok Dham to this deity form to, out of his compassionate nature, to accept our offerings.
Yes.
So this thought, Krishna is there.
Yeah.
It's not a like marble deity or somebody will... That yes. thought itself, Krishna is presence.
Yes.
So that's what I meant, like yes, philosophically.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
And that's required. Without yeah. that, you will not go, just jump all of a sudden, Krishna will appear.
Yes.
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, true. Thank you, Guru. Okay. Yeah.
I was also appreciating Prabhupada's purport.
Yes.
That he said, without these three things, bhakti cannot be performed.
Mm.
You just read.
Yes.
Bhakti, bhakta, and Bhagavan. Very, very beautiful.
Yeah.
And then second line or third line, he said something like, unless somebody has a personal concept of Supreme Bhagavan,
bhakti is not possible.
Means Brahman Paramatma, you cannot do bhakti.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. That means majority, a lot of people that they do bhakti in the name of, very impersonalist, that's not really bhakti.
That's true. That's true. Unless you have a personal conception of God in some, then bhakti cannot be performed.
Correct.
Real bhakti.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Thank you. Nice class.
Hi, thank you, Prabhu. Yes, Chitari Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. I was just thinking, you know, Srila Prabhupada coming on the Jaladutta, you know, and what does he have on that boat? He has his books.
Mm.
And so... You know, for us, we can really connect with Srila Prabhupada by just, you know, it's like we're an extension of that boat when we hand someone a book.
Mm.
And we actually, you know, whatever's going on in our lives, you know, whatever difficulties or whatever, just that moment, you know, we're connected to Prabhupada, you know, and we can actually feel that... Prabhupada has. So, anyway.
Beautiful. Yeah, it said that the disciples should become the limbs of the spiritual master. So that you explain that perfectly, because it's his heart, his desire, but he can't do everything with his, he's one person in one place. So the disciples are meant to become the limbs that can do the same activity, but far and wide, even after he's gone. He's not gone, of course. He's there. And the experience of him comes through that service attitude towards the desire, the will of the guru. Jai. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.